Welcome home, brave heroes. I'm Ash, and this is Ash Quest, and it's time once again for the long-form podcast-styled series, The Bwodcast. This will be the last episode available on non-YouTube platforms for now, for the foreseeable future, having RSS.com take my podcast and forward it to many other providers on my behalf has been fun. It's been enlightening. It's been a little bit educational. It's been rewarding in that people who have wanted to hear the podcast but don't want to deal with YouTube, which is totally, totally understandable, have been able to do that. And it's kind of sort of enlightening to see who all listens. But to be honest, not an enormous return. It's a cost. It's not free, unfortunately, for me. And I don't podcast often enough to really, one, take advantage of all the tools RSS has to offer, and two, really start to garner an audience on those other platforms. So enough time spent talking about that. If you are one of the listeners on a non-YouTube platform, do consider coming to the YouTube platform, keeping an eye on the podcasts and the posts that I make, the non-video posts, talking about just news with the channel, and keep an eye out for one day a return to the other platforms, because this is just a done for now. One day, I'm sure, I'll have a use for RSS and the other platforms. If you are curious, I am on, apparently, if I go to RSS and I check it out, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Podcast Index, Castro, CastBox, Fountain, Overcast, Pocket Casts, Podcast Addict, Podcast Guru, and True Fans. I don't know what two-thirds of these are, to be completely honest. I know Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And I know about the Podcast Index, and I'm fairly certain all the rest of the ones on the list pull from Podcast Index. But enough about all that nonsense. We want to talk about HeroQuest stuff, right? In a week where there's not a whole lot of news. There's not really a whole lot, so I guess I really just want to encapsulate the experience that I have and the perspective that I have with the latest release, with the upcoming releases, with what I would love to see at this point, and how I hope homebrewers approach their methods, their how I hope they adjust their approaches to creating homebrew. And I've kind of said a lot of this in the last episode, but this is just a kind of send off to the first, what I'll call, season of Bwodcast. We'll call this the season finale. And so, you know, that makes a lot more sense. It's a season finale. I'm going to take a big break from the Bwodcast. And the universe has this strange way of listening. So whenever I'm like, hey guys, it's me, I'm going to stop doing this thing, it always puts stuff near me and around me and into my brain so that I end up doing the thing that I was not going to do again, at least for a while, pretty immediately. So, you know, that may happen. Season 2 may start up exactly where season 1 ends, but we won't end on a cliffhanger. We'll make this a nice rounded off series. The podcast has been my soapbox, and I use this soapbox to just talk exclusively about Dungeon Crawler adjacent, HeroQuest adjacent, HeroQuest directly. Mostly it is just HeroQuest directly. There's really not a whole lot of stuff that's non-HeroQuest. It's always talking about design convention and choices and history, and that's about it. And I do take the opportunity to use it where I don't talk about this stuff, or it would be out of scope to talk about this stuff in my other videos. So sometimes, you know, I might have a video where I have a chance to talk about, you know, Against the Ogre Horde is out. Here's the new version. Here's what the old version looks like. Here's some trivia about that. Or like I just, not just, but quite a while back now, time flies, on Amalgamash, I did a everything we want to see for 2024 HeroQuest vid. Very happy that about half of that list has been completely fulfilled. And half is really not bad at all. That was an editorial. That was where I could really get on a soapbox and talk about all the stuff I wanted to see. But this really just fringes into the nonsense, the rambling, the technicalities and so on. And so, yeah, it's a really nice little place for me to be. And I hope the broadcast is a nice place for you as well. Would love to have had more guests, and actively recruiting and getting guests onto the broadcast is something I'll try harder for in my next season, whatever that is and whenever that is. I will try to get people in the Discord more involved. Time windows continue to be a bit of a constraint for me because of my work schedule and because of my recording schedule. And that's honestly just on me, and it's something I'll have to deal with. And if people can't make it, that's a loss I've got to eat. It would be really cool to get some of the creators on here, give them a space to talk and speak to the people who have supported them, who have criticized things that they've done here and there, people that they've just encountered on their journey, video creator, homebrew creator, even if you just made like a deck of cards and you're selling it on Etsy. I'd love to know your thoughts. I'd like to know your thought process behind your design. I'd like to know what inspires you to make this stuff. I'd like to know, do you use stuff like this in your daily life, in your not maybe daily life, but in your gameplays of HeroQuest on the regular? Are you practicing what you preach? I am not. I am not practicing what I'm preaching, but I haven't really gotten to the point where I'm doing a lot of that preaching just yet. I'm still making, I'm still commissioning art for my homebrew. Yes, I've got homebrew out the yin yang on the horizon, and some of it is, you can see peaks of it here and there. I've been talking forever about, not really forever, I started talking about it forever ago, and I've not talked about it in a long time. The Speak Deck and the Feats Deck. And I don't mean feats as in your feetsies that have toesies at the end of your leggies. I mean your heroic feat, F-E-A-T, where you are able to determine whether your hero has the appropriate strength or dexterity or wisdom to pull off a particular action. This has been something that's been difficult to get into the game in a natural way, in a way that seems to make sense, at least to me. I'm sure there are a lot of approaches to it, but I have been very slowly working with a fantastic artist. I have been commissioning pieces slowly but surely, completely human crafted, painstakingly, zero AI anywhere. And once I commission the last of the pieces and I can actually get my cards together and printed, I'll probably use a local print shop and I'll try to get these set up to where I can handle the fulfillment and I can support a local business while at the same time give recognition to the artist and just eliminate the middleman. I can go ahead and ship you the product at a price that is lower than what a place like a platform like the Game Crafter would charge. That's the plan anyway. I don't know how great it will be, but honestly, it'll be a great way to start breaking in and seeing where the challenges lie for when I want to sell things of a more ambitious nature. This is pretty ambitious for me, but it is quite pared back. The scale is actually quite a bit small. It's about 15 cards, and I think instead of a 15 card deck, 15 unique outcomes, I'll go ahead and make it like a 30 card deck with double the amount of possibilities. But we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. I don't know what kind of offerings the print shop will have or what cost will be, things like that. It'll be really interesting. It'll be really, really interesting. It would be really cool if I could get the cards to be PVC. But enough about that. You'll hear more official news on that front once I get closer. As far as art goes, I'm nowhere near done. As far as mechanics are concerned, that is done. Two different products that are likely going to be offered as standalone as well as combined. I think I did mention the Speak Deck. The Speak Deck and the Feats Deck, right? 15 different cards in each one, probably going to be 30 card decks in each one. And then if you order them together, you get like a 60 card deck. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do it just yet, but I'll put some thought into it. Try to follow an established convention, and then you'll be able to use these decks to greatly enhance, well, I don't know about greatly, to somewhat enhance your HeroQuest experience. They are very much inspired by mechanics from Dragon Strike, unabashedly. All right, so as far as the current state of things, as of the time of this podcast, there's no news on anything HeroQuest related. We do have First Light coming. There's some speculation that the pushback that the publisher received for revealing the obviously AI, heavily AI assisted cover to First Light was the cause for the speculated delay in the production of First Light. There's actually been no word whatsoever. There's no proof that there's a delay. There's nothing from any official source that says, yeah, we had to push this back. The original date was going to be sooner. Now it's going to be later. However, a lot of us are thinking it should have been out by now. And we're thinking, what with the reveals and the major events and kind of the lack of HeroQuest new stuff at those events. I mean, the alternatives are absolutely possible, but it seems to be a strong possibility, strongly likely, that we should have been able to get First Light by now, or at least a release date. We do have a current release date of January 12th, 2025, which is after the Christmas season. So it seems super strange that they would want to release it after Christmas, despite this being the opportunity to get the box into a lot more stores than what the first incarnation of this game system was able to make it into. The first HeroQuest, that should be able to make it into just about any major online retailer, and definitely onto the Hasbro's own fulfillment outlet, and definitely as many friendly local game stores as possible. I know of a few that don't carry HeroQuest at all, which just feels weird, because you can get it at GameStop, but you can't get it at your friendly local game store. It's so weird. It's a game with cardboard and plastic. You set the pieces out. There's a fantasy land. There's lore, story that gets read to the players. It's roll to move. There are special dice. Why is it not at my friendly local game store? I don't know. They just explicitly do not carry HeroQuest. That's what they'll tell you if you call them. But First Light seeks to change the availability. Well, we have a Target exclusivity, and I recently, see if I can find it and I can read it verbatim, in response to a question that Jay Blackstone asked, do you think that due to the First Light artwork fix that they may have pushed other HeroQuest projects back? Reason I ask is because to me it seems they are really quiet on future expansions. And I think we can agree. I think the consensus is that there's usually not a whole lot of news. There's not a whole lot of buildup or hype from Avalon Hill, from Hasbro on future expansions. There's maybe a leak, and then they're quiet about whatever leak. They don't acknowledge it. They're like super quiet. And then boom, there's an announcement, and then there's nothing else. There's no teaser. There's not a lot of focus on, say, content creators or anything getting review copies or anything like that early to show off the contents. Usually there's just not a lot of buzz, and there already wasn't a lot of buzz, but it seems like since the layoffs, there's just been drastically less buzz. The people who were very comfortable dealing with folks in the Discords and in the communities aren't there to kind of tease things and wink and nudge. And it's not as exciting to not have that, even though it doesn't change anything. I mean, it is a lot of fun to have somebody wink, wink, nudge, nudge, or drop a completely contextless picture and just give no explanation. You know, fails to elaborate and then leaves. I love that stuff. And I have to imagine there's a lot of folks that love that stuff. And we don't get that anymore. And that's okay. That's fine. The hardworking folks remaining, at the company making this stuff for us. I really appreciate them. They're doing fantastic. But the way that I read the question is, I don't know about it pushing other stuff back. I don't know where other stuff is in their pipeline. We know, you know, we have a general figure of 18 months that was given to us one time. Is that still the timeline? I don't know. I think it's possible it could be. I think it's possible it could have changed. I'm fairly agnostic on that point. Is it possible that it pushed other projects back? The changing of the artwork? Yeah, sure. But also, other stuff could be early enough along that it just doesn't matter. But did this potentially last minute, since we didn't know exactly where in the production pipeline First Light was when we got the original art reveal, and when we spoke up as fans against the AI, did that, if it was fairly late in the production process, potentially last minute major component change, where they actually went back and silently changed the artwork, affect the product's production pipeline? And that's, of course, for me, that is a huge yes, an absolute yes. Did it affect its production? Yeah, obviously, super yes. But we don't know to what extent, because we don't know what the planned street date would have been at the time they released that image. Was it always going to be January 12th? You know, maybe. And maybe they made some last minute orders. They spent a little bit of extra for the overnight shipping. They got their new artist on board really fast. They were like, we'll pay you expedited. Go, go, go. They got their proofs. They just said, yeah, just run it. They replaced their boxes. If there were any boxes, it's possible that they still haven't ordered the production of the box covers. It's possible they still hadn't ordered the production of the books. And I'm not sure what else would have had reference to the AI art that was originally made for First Light. If it was perhaps on the backs of any of the cards, anything like that, it's possible that none of that stuff was in production yet. And they were able to replace all of the proofs and all of the references to the artwork and get production back on schedule, or at least get back on the road to production without losing any time. Super possible to have done that. Also possible that boxes were being manufactured, that this was almost a done deal, that stuff was at the fulfillment center, boxes ready to be put together, pieces ready to be stuck in candy trays, the assemblage ready to happen. And it's also possible that this was already happening, that there were boxes in fulfillment centers, that shipments were about to be made to hubs to get to where they needed to go so that they could be readily shipped to retailer distribution warehouses and things. Logistics, it can be a slow-moving business. It doesn't always have to be a slow-moving business, but the logistics portion of this is such a huge variable. It could have taken anywhere from like a week to make three stops, four stops, you change hands three or four times, all the way up to a month. It just depends. What was the budget? What was spent? What was the means of travel? Did anything have to travel by ship, cargo container? Humans who have to deal with shipping and receiving every single day and open boxes every single day for dozens of companies would have had to have had their hands on this. There was every single risk of product making it to the wrong bin because of human error. I have a believe it or not story. In a previous life, which is business speak, which is meeting phrasing for a long time ago, I worked in a fulfillment environment. Order fulfillment warehouse. We handled the back end for just about any client that would sign a contract to have their vendors ship their products to us. That fulfillment business is very close to me. Not, you know, to my heart. I mean, physically, it's close by. It was a very convenient job to have. And I worked in inventory for a while, so I was able to see all of the different ways that people can mishandle things in a business like a fulfillment warehouse. You would not believe what it's possible to do unless you've ordered enough stuff from Amazon, and then it suddenly makes sense. And if you work at Amazon, it probably totally makes sense. Your job in fulfillment is going to be handling stuff arbitrarily. If you work in receiving, you're opening packages all day. Some of these packages come from UPS, some from USPS, some from FedEx. You'll get some from DHL. It just depends on what the business that you're doing the fulfillment for wants to use. So you'll just get all of them. So if you do back end and fulfillment for, like, you know, 20 companies, which is what we did, you'll deal with every carrier known to man. And that's not talking about the trucking companies. The trucking companies that deliver the LTLs, there are dozens, if not hundreds, in the US. And there are all kinds of hubs. There is scheduling that has to be made, which is really, honestly, it's just a phone call. You just call. You would call me and ask if I had any open dates. And we were order fulfillment warehouse. We couldn't just say no to our clients. We had to receive their shipments. So I would just say, yeah, as soon as possible. I would try to not schedule it at the same time as another container was being unloaded. A lot of the times we would have containers that would come in on pallets. The product would be on pallets in the truck, which was great. If they loaded it that way, it would have been very convenient for them. But most of the time, if you're dealing with a shipment from like China, you're not going to get stuff on pallets because they want to maximize the amount of space that's in that 20-foot or 40-foot or 55-foot container as it gets onto the ship, and they will pack it floor to ceiling with boxes of all shapes and sizes. It will literally be like they're playing 3D Tetris. And these are the shipments that came from China and India. They had to go overseas, so it would make sense to load them that way. Unfortunately, they have to be unloaded that way. So we would get into the backs of these trucks, and it doesn't matter if it was in the middle of summer. The truck would back in, driver would open the doors, back into the dock, chalk the wheels, and we'd throw the dock plate over and walk in, or I would say walk in, except when you open the doors, the boxes are right there in your face. Now you've got to unload these boxes. And these boxes, this might be a shipment of, like, you know, 10 different vendors on one truck that's coming from a different country. It could just be one vendor. And it could be that company's only overseas vendor. You know, they could have several, they could have one. The companies are just all shapes and sizes. They have all shapes and sizes of logistics. So these things would get unloaded onto pallets. Now, I say all of that to kind of set the scene for you. But sometimes you'll get, you know, a shipment in from a company and they're smart, right? They made a delivery. They videotaped their worker putting stuff in the boxes. They videotaped their workers putting the pallets on the truck or putting the boxes on the pallet and then wrapping it. And every box will have a sticker on it. This is pretty common for, like, FedEx deliveries. Next time you get a FedEx delivery that's more than one box, check out the stickers. You'll probably see that it's got a 1 of 2 and a 2 of 2, or like a 1 of 5, 2 of 5, 3 of 5, all the way up to 5 of 5 if it's a 5-box shipment. And we'll get shipments from a particular company that would send like 30 boxes of all shapes and sizes. I don't know why this stuff couldn't just go into one box, except I do kind of know why. Because all of these products were coming from different vendors, and as it was going through the hub, they just threw it together rather than repackage or anything like that, leaving us to do the work that they were paying us to do. Makes sense, right? So we'd get our boxes, and we would carefully confirm against the packing list that everything was in there. I worked in receiving after I worked in inventory, and if anything was missing, since we were using scanners to scan the barcodes of everything to receive it into our system, the client would know. They'd be watching the receipt of products because they'd have access to our system. They'd have view access. And the liaison, the rep for that company, would email me or call me sometimes. Rarely. I did not like that. Just send an email. I mean, better yet, call the rep so that the rep can communicate with the warehouse. Don't call the warehouse directly. That's so awkward. And then she would ask, you know, you guys received 31 of 32 packages. Where's the 32nd package? Inside it was a widget. And I'm thinking, the amount of money that you're going to sell the widget for, and the profit going to the bottom line from just the one widget, is going to be far outweighed by the amount of time we're going to spend in labor just looking for it. But, you know, it wasn't really the client's problem because they had pretty set billing. So all of the other extra time was kind of being eaten by the company for which I worked. So whatever. So we go out and look for that widget and go over the entire shipment again, sometimes a third time. And that would result in emails like, well, it wasn't there. And then the reply to the email, which was, I don't think so. They're very meticulous. They recorded all of their stuff being packaged. And, you know, just sometimes we'd find the thing. It would be like, well, this was actually in this other box. Oh, well, I'll have to get with them on that. Yeah, you will. Thank you. Or sometimes it would be, well, it was in this other box. We missed it because this box was packaged inside of a box. Or it would be, oh, we found it. It's our bad. Or it would be legitimately, okay, the 32nd box didn't make it. They still have it. They just came back on another delivery and gave it to us, and so on. There's all manner of things that can happen to these stupid packages. And then we've got X amount of time to get all this stuff in our system and staged for the next part of the process for this product's lifetime in our warehouse, which was so that the crew responsible for getting it to its pick bins, where the pickers would go through and get product out of bins as if they were shopping for the people that were ordering the products online or over the phone, would be able to do so. So we would get it staged, get it labeled, sorted appropriately, and it would be out of our department, out of our hands. So here comes the crew now to do that. And we might have our stuff last minute because we have so many other things. Our life can't revolve around the widget or the company that makes the widgets or the client that has ordered the widgets to be shipped to us. We have to move on to the next company. We have to move on to the next client. And we have to have this revolving door every single day because we have to serve all 20 clients so that we can pay the bills. And really, if you think about it, Avalon Hill's stuff going through, changing hands, just another cog in the wheel. It's just another few drops in the bucket of whatever fulfillment center, whatever distribution hub of whatever retail outlet is handling this stuff. So it's entirely possible for things to have been moved around, shuffled. And for that reason, you want lead time. You want lots and lots of cushion. You can do last minute orders. They always do cost more. We had a special kind of receiving that we did for products that were shipped to us in an expedited fashion. And the industry term for what I'm talking about is going to be cross-dock, or at least it was back then. And it's been a long time since I've used this terminology, so it's kind of weird to be talking about it now. But we would have cross-dock items come in. And I mean, these were individual baggy packages that each had their own tracking. They came from dozens of different places to our warehouse. So the receiving of them consisted of scanning the label on the bag to put into our system that the tracking number had been officially received. We had human hands on it in the warehouse, and the client would have visibility of that, or we would have visibility of that, so we could backtrack if the client requested update on a tracking number. And if we couldn't find the tracking number in our in-house database, it meant that we didn't have human hands on it. We never scanned it. So we kind of had a little bit of, it doesn't look like it showed up yet. And if we did, then, oh crap, it looks like, you know, Joe Smith scanned it in. Gonna have to go question him on that and try to hunt it down from there. But we opened all of those, and inside each bag would be a widget. And we had to scan these widgets. We had to categorize them. 30 different places to one warehouse, 30 plus products being opened and taken out of the packages, staged for the crew to come in, grab, and bring to the bins, all in the hopes that we would make the deadline, which was like, I don't know, 12, 1, 2, I don't remember what it was, so that when orders were printed, because orders would be printed throughout the day at set times, and sometimes special orders would be printed at the request of the client, all of the orders that had gone into the system up to that point since the last print would be printed out and given to the pickers, and the pickers would now have to spend time going from bin to bin where the people who put the products away had just gotten done taking the product that we received, putting it into the bin, and pick it back out, add it to their order, their little cubby. Usually they had like carts with like 20 different spaces, and each space was its own little order. And they would drag the carts through, and they would get rid of all of their other orders as well. I mean, they would pick their orders. They would get rid of the void, the not having the product in the order fulfilled yet, I guess is what I meant by that. And they would go through, again, cogging the wheel, one of many. They're dealing with like 20 orders at a time. And if the person responsible for putting away the product put it in the wrong bin, then your picker's not going to find it. And if the picker doesn't know what that bin is or where it's at, they're not going to find it. And if they put it with the wrong order, which could happen because, you know, they're doing 20 orders at the same time, and they roll that up to a packer who's doing their job, the order could get mixed up and lost if the packer's not paying attention and if they put an item into a box and ship it without verifying the contents. Now, everything was all scanned. It was as automated as much as possible, but you had humans touching stuff everywhere, so you had a lot of room for human error. You could scan the right thing, then take your hands and do the wrong thing after doing that. And if you got complacent because you were doing that hundreds of times a day, then you could mess stuff up. And all the automation in the world wasn't going to help you at that point. But yeah, there's just all kinds of stuff that could go wrong with that. And the cross-dock orders, they generally made it onto the truck that night. But the way that the logic was set up, sometimes the put-away people would not be able to get to it until after the last order print. And I always questioned, if that's happening, then they're not getting their order shipped within the 12-hour window because they're not going to be back in to put the stuff away until the next shift tomorrow. And the answer that I always got in return was whoever I'd be talking to, they'd put their finger up to their lips and they'd go, shh, we know. So weird. All of that was done because of contractual obligations that were set forth and signed on whenever the client was signing up to have us fulfill their services. So, you know, all stuff that would be pretty distinct to that client. Not all contracts are created equal. Not all clients have their logistics set up the same way. Not all companies operate the same, and that's fine. Like I said, they're all different sizes. They're all different speeds. It's just bewildering sometimes to think about when you get in there and you get exposed to all of it. And it's fascinating to see all of the different ways that people handle their stuff, especially when you deal with, you know, one or two companies one way, and you get to dealing with that third company, big or small, and you think, man, they could save so much money if they were doing it the way that the first two companies were doing it. It was just handling the labor. It's your biggest margin, and yet you don't really have things streamlined. It's interesting. So it was definitely an interesting job. It was stressful, but it was interesting. And it's kind of the first time I've really talked about it in depth since departing ways with them so long ago. But I wanted also to share that about, I want to say 12 years ago, we had a large warehouse leased, and our manager, it'd be longer than 12 years ago now, but anyways, our manager was talking about clients coming through, and we had pretty much most of the warehouse completely filled. Business was booming. The throughput of products going through the receiving department was just nuts. And our manager was talking about taking on a new client, and had to visit. They were going to walk through. Guess who that client was? I'm going to take a sip of coffee while I give you time to guess. The client was Hasbro. Believe it or not, Hasbro checked out our warehouse. And I was thinking to myself, this could be so, so, so good. Also, so, so, so bad. I did research and I found out that Hasbro owned all of these different companies. And I had no idea that that's how that worked. And I thought, how cool would it be to get like the warehouse employee discount on stuff that comes in, because we'd get a discount. We could go place an order with our own call center because the call center was with the warehouse. It was all bundled together. It was part of the service. It's not anymore, but it was. And you would get a pretty nice discount. And I'm thinking, God, we're going to have Barbies coming through here. And I'm thinking, we're going to have, what is this, Magic the Gathering is part of this? What? We don't have a warehouse big enough for this. That's what I was thinking. I was just starting to freak out. Like, that's so cool. But at the same time, please no. Please no. I don't want that workload. I don't want that. So we're going to have like 5 more people in the department. And for context, I was the supervisor of the department, which is why I was really like not looking forward to working out the schedule. I'd be excited about the challenge now. But back then I was, my morale was challenged daily and I was exhausted and I was just like, no, they ended up not coming. And the only information I could get as to why we were not chosen was that our security just wasn't up to their standard. The openness of the warehouse, how easy it was for somebody to just kind of slip in off the street. And, you know, that's true to this day. Crazily enough, you could probably go to that warehouse off the main street and just walk up the shipping entrance steps, go through the cafeteria, and walk right onto the warehouse floor. And if it's a night shift, you could just go check stuff out before being... I don't condone that activity. I hope that they do have fantastic security now, but for the longest time, it was not that way. So, yeah, that was a road that I wanted to take down memory lane. Bit of a dirt road, lots of rocks there. The paths are pretty grown over with the grass. Memories that accompany that, not so pleasant. So we're back to the present, back to what do we want to see? And to switch gears really fast, one of the things that people have been talking about wanting to see, Wizards of Morcar. It'd be so cool if they kept the name. They just kept it Wizards of Morcar. Games Workshop, vague, unrelated character with similar name, be damned. Just keep it Wizards of Morcar. Keep him Morcar, because why not? That would be so cool. And this could be an independent entity. This could be an awesome, badass wizard that is super powerful, just in the employ, basically, of Zargon. It could also be a completely independent wizard, much how the jungles of Delthrak pose their own problems to anybody who wants to go touring through that heavily vegetated forest. It would be really neat if Morcar was established as an independent entity that was, like, already kind of trying to pursue their own evil goals. And the forces of Zargon are kind of also there. Like, Morcar is already a respectable, if dangerous, enemy or entity. We have to put their plan down, but also we don't want Zargon to influence them. And of course, Zargon's going to influence them, but you have your orc shaman, you have your high mage, you have your weather mage, storm master, whatever you'd like to call them. If they keep the same names as the older, if they change them, won't make too much of a difference. But I mean, I don't see why not keep them. And your necromancer and all of your abilities that come with those guys. I've seen some chatter on how they could make that expansion better. I have expressed my disinterest and disdain over the idea and contempt over the idea and disgust over the idea that they merge this with the original Wizard quest pack that never got released. I don't want to see that. But I have changed my position on wanting to see this be released with the Dark Company. I think the Dark Company doesn't really have a place to be released on its own. I don't think it's a good idea to make it a digital only. Unless they're really trying to draw attention to the app and trying to market that. But I could only see them doing that if they posited that the Dark Company should be monetized. A microtransaction. And I would not like to see that business model be explored by Avalon Hill or through HeroQuest. So I would say that this is the perfect opportunity and the best opportunity to put the Dark Company into an official contemporary game system context. Merge it per se with the Wizards of Morcar. Make it like the prequel quest. Perhaps it could be the post quest. Perhaps you could have the Wizards of Morcar content first, which was only 5 quests, and then you could have the 13-part Dark Company quest as kind of a final pushback. Because the Dark Company is the kind of quest where, like, the killer's already in the house. You've got to undo corruption. You've got to clean out house. You've got to get rid of the evil influence of Morcar and the forces of chaos that have already made their filthy way into the Empire, into the realm. And that is way different than journeying to another land and getting rid of the threat there, or getting rid of the threat in the neighboring kingdom because their politicians are becoming corrupt because they've been taken over, they've succumbed to the powers of evil. This is in your, not in your backyard, this is in your bathroom, this is in your living room. This is what the Dark Company is. And it would be a really cool idea to play out the events of the Wizards of Morcar as if you've journeyed abroad and then came home to the Dark Company, as if that was the plan all along, was to get you out of the way so that the Dark Company can happen. And then when you're in, you're back, and you're fighting against these Dark Company members and all the forces of dread, as it would be now, and you get to the final room and you clear that out, well, you can be done with this 13-part quest, and then they can add one more to just end it all. They can add one more to put a complete and total, or you know what, there's nothing wrong with recontextualizing a little bit, changing the locations, I guess. I don't like the idea of changing it up that much, but you know, if the locations they're using are ones that they can't use for whatever reason, then they could definitely have you do like four of the Dark, or I'm sorry, of the Wizards of Morcar quests, in which you take out the four individual baddies, and then do the Dark Company, and then do the fifth quest of Wizards of Morcar, in which you are taking out the dread component as well as the expansion component, the wizards, as well as the dread, chaos, whatever you want to call it, sorcerer, that has orchestrated the whole thing. So the last boss, the big, bad, evil guy, as it were. And then that keeps it open-ended. That keeps Morcar and or Zargon still alive to create more chaos or dread down the road. It keeps the ending vague. It keeps you playing. So I like that idea very much. I think that's a possible way to go. But, you know, if they don't end up doing that and they just end up adding maybe like five quests to the game expansion, to make it their 10, which seems to be a convention that they've committed to, I think that's really cool. I think that's fine. It's an additive change, and I respect that. I will make a bit of speculation here known. If they do it that way, I think it's very possible that those five quests will be part of another game mode that they have not previously released or teased or anything. Against the Ogre Horde obviously introduced the arena mode, and it was part of the expansion. You actually played the arena mode and got to experience the mechanics of it, and then you got to play the original Against the Ogre Horde expansion with minor changes. They could do the same thing with Wizards of Morcar. That'd be pretty cool. Five new quests of a different kind of mode of play. Who knows what it would be, like maybe an expansive travel sort of thing. Maybe they could mix the quests in to explain the journey that your heroes take in between quests. So like a travel system, maybe with settlements, maybe with travel events, maybe with traveling hazards. And this would be something that the community's been talking about and homebrewing forever and a day. It would make 100,000% sense, if you can imagine that making any sense, for it to be an officially recognized system included with the game. I think that'd be super cool. And it would just be another way of honoring the community and putting what they want in the game. I think that'd be so, so, so cool. And then think about it, board tiles, big board tiles with town scenery or inns or something. Yes, gimme. And then you could replace your board quadrants with town bits and stuff. Come on, Avalon Hill. If you're not working on Wizards of Morkar at all right now, it's like way later in the pipeline. You have other stuff, other original content. Take these ideas, please. Or, you know, call me. I'll steward for a little bit of money. I will steward as a contractor for you. There's so many that would do it better than me, but I'll make my services known. So that's what I'm looking forward to finding out more about. That's what I would love to see, some variation on that. And everything else right now, I think we're just waiting for the next official clean announcement. I don't think we're going to get much else. I did see something really cool that I want to share. I did not think of, and I'm really surprised that nobody else brought this up, unless they did, but they didn't bring it up to me. Bohemius sent me a message asking, well, this is going to go into Talisman spoiler territory, so I'm not going to say anything just yet. I don't think I have anything else to talk about as far as, well, basically anything else. So I'll give you a little bit of a huzzah, and then we'll talk a little bit about this spoiler stuff for Talisman before ending the episode. But for those of you who are, just a disclaimer, for those of you who are not interested in Talisman, playing the new Alliance's Fate Beckons expansion, I'm going to talk about the stuff that comes with that very briefly. So if you don't want to be spoiled on it, then now would be a decent time to click off the video. But before you go, and I'll give you another warning before I delve into that spoiler content. Before you go, my board game addiction, my RSS.com bill, all of that stuff is sponsored by you guys. The money that I spend on cards and board games and all that, if it's not sent to me directly from a creator who's trying to get their homebrew stuff out there or known, which is not very often, it's me buying it directly. No discount. I don't get money for making videos about this stuff. Generally, I just get product if anybody wants to give me their homebrew or what have you. And I usually don't do videos about digital stuff because I'm incentivizing folks to send me physical stuff. But I'm saying all that to say your viewership and subscription is what pays for that. And so thank you very much. And those of you who join the memberships side of things and do super chats and stuff like that, thank you so much. It directly supports the channel. That $5 super chat is $5 that went into me buying a copy of World of Warcraft, The Adventure Game, or Dwarf Romantic, or Arkham Horror, or whatever I've got back there on my shelf. Or it's contributed to me being able to buy lumber so that I can build more board game shelving. And it's contributed to me being able to buy microphones like the Beacon microphone that I'm using right now, a dynamic USB with incredible range, or lighting for the studio so that I can look a little bit better for those of you that care in my videos, and so on. It all contributes to the channel. I don't use it to pay myself, get gas, food, anything like that. I have a job for all that stuff. And if you want to support the channel more, please consider checking out the Patreon. It supports the channel directly. Patreon does take their cut. YouTube takes their cut. Whatever the case may be, that's fine. You got to have a middleman, I guess. But you can absolutely check out the Patreon, see if any of the tiers sound appealing to you, and feel free to subscribe through Patreon because, I mean, I got tiers there that are like $1.50 a month. Most people that subscribe just stay on it. I think that they forget that they're paying $1.50 a month. But $1.50 contributes to the overall. Like, I have to pay taxes on my income. $1.50 helps with the taxes, you know? It all helps. And for the $5 tier, my own homebrew quests that I am writing for my Grimdark campaign, which is 100% compatible with HeroQuest, are being released month by month and published. And I've got polls up asking people where they want to go next for that. So you'll see an incarnation of that physically in the future. But anyways, thank you very much for watching and for supporting. I really appreciate you guys. Wanted to make that very clear in my last, for now, broadcast, the broadcast of the season. So Getting into the Talisman spoiler stuff, this is your last chance to click off. Those of you who are clicking off, see you next time. Have a great rest of your day and bye for now. Those of you who are staying, Bohemius sent me a message asking if Talisman was connecting with HeroQuest in a subtle way. Because there are four characters who come from a magazine called, I don't know how to say it exactly, Dragao. It's a Brazilian magazine. The reason that these characters are in a Brazilian magazine is because they are supporting the Brazilian release of HeroQuest. Way back in the 90s, the Brazilian release of HeroQuest is the release that had the cardboard standees. It is one version of the game that I do not have. I would like to have it, but this version of the game used standees instead of miniatures. It was a much lower cost to create and distribute. And that magazine was giving you homebrew characters for that game. Now, First Light has standees, right? First Light, it's coming out, it's using standees. It has 3D models for its miniatures. And the four characters that are from this Brazilian magazine, Dragao, are the fairy, the centaur, the Amazon, and the Minotaur. That's four characters from this magazine. These are four characters that we have never seen in HeroQuest other than as printed onto hero cards. They all have their own stats. I'll talk about them right now. The Amazon has 2 attack dice, 3 defense dice, 6 body, and 4 mind. They start with a dagger. There's nothing else special about them. I can't read the backs of the cards, though. I was only sent the front. So I'm going to do a little bit more research, but I'm just giving you the information I have. The Centaur has 2 attack and defend dice, 7 body and 3 mind, starts with a short sword, and has 3 red dice for movement, which is a first for me. This is the first time I've ever seen a character with 3 red dice for movement, believe it or not. Minotaur has 3 attack dice, 2 defend dice, 9 body, and 1 mind, and starts with a long sword. Absolute tank. Absolute tank, but dumber than the barbarian. All right. And the fairy. The fairy just has a dagger and 2 red dice, 1 attack dice, 2 defend dice, body 4, mind 6. It is unknown to me right now if the fairy has magical powers or not. But I wanted to point out that the Amazon draws parallels to the Valkyrie from Talisman's Alliance's Fate Beckons expansion, which is hidden in a blind box. The centaur draws parallels to the centaur. The fairy could draw parallels to the magical character. And the minotaur, well, that draws parallels to the minotaur from that expansion, to the Talisman Alliance's Fate Beckons. These are parallels that you can draw because it's awfully coincidental that we have a female warrior, a centaur, a minotaur, and then this magical fairy hero. And these are so similar, if not identical, in 2 of the cases, to the characters from the Fate Beckons expansion coming out sooner than, but you know, around the same time as the First Light HeroQuest game system, which has standees. So it really does seem like Bohemius' suggestion here that these four are the Brazilian characters from the Dragao magazine from the 90s. An amazing connection. I love that. I really love that. That's so cool. But as promised, that's the last thing that I'll talk about. Everything else was before the spoiler alert. So guys, thank you again so much for supporting the channel. It's had an amazing first year. I would love to reach the heights of Always Bored, Never Boring, the Dungeon Dive. These are my aspirations. And I don't want to take anything away from them. They are doing awesome. And I hope they continue to do awesome and grow and continue to stay ahead so I continue to have a North Star. And that's it for now. I will see you in the next episode. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day, and bye for now.